Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Nuggets News, or our monthly housing and economy update with our friend Martin North over in the UK. How are you, Martin?
Very good, thank you. How are you going down there? Again, it's quite hot at the moment.
Yeah, it's very hot down here in Tassie, loving summer, but pretty crazy times in Australia in general, which we might touch on a little bit. But what are your thoughts on some of these new free speech laws? And just before we started recording, a push for this new digital ID for the healthcare system is trying to be rushed through as well. So it seems like they're really ramping up this, everything we've been warning about for so long.
Yeah, I'm afraid that digital control and, controlling what you can say, how you can get access to things, it's all part of a bigger plan. And you and I have been talking about this for some time. Why? Because, of course, the government wants to be able to just exert more power on what happens. And I think this is something which we're seeing in many countries, but I think Australia is right at the front of the pack at the moment. Think about what's happened with regards to the digital access for kids, for example, and they're claiming it as a victory for, common sense, all those things. But put it all together and you can see the blueprint now being built out. And unfortunately, it's coming quite quickly. And it means that there's less capacity for people to do what they want to do versus what the government wants them to do.
We might talk about it a bit more when we get into some of these slides, but let's dive in to begin with. So you've got Trump's come out of the, he's come out charging with just executive order after executive order, hasn't he?
He has, and it's important to understand this concept of what we call flooding the zone. In other words, just throw so much out there that nobody really can, absorb everything that's going on. It's a deliberate strategy. And so quite often, some of the things that he will be doing will be not necessarily, core policy. Has he got core policy? Well, sort of, but it's all about protecting and building the resilience of the US. And, whether that's drugs, whether it's actually getting more revenue coming in from tariffs, all of those things. And of course, then he's intervening in the Middle East and the Gaza situation and Ukraine. And it's a blizzard. And it's just interesting that, more than orders have come in the first few days relative to pretty much every president previously. Also note that some of those orders don't necessarily have legal force. And so effectively, some of them are being blocked or, certainly picked apart. But the overall essence here is, I think, three things. Firstly, it's a deliberate strategy. Secondly, the old idea of this rules-based order, and whether you think the rules-based order has served everybody or not is an interesting question. But since the Second World War, we've had a set of principles that sort of guide how things are done. Well, those seem to be outturned at the moment, left, right, and centre. Yes. And then the third thing is, just be clear. Whether you like it or not, this is the reality that we're going to have for the next 4 years. So when you're making investment decisions, when you're thinking about, your future plans, whether you like what Trump is doing or not, you got to live with it.
The thing for me, Martin, is that they're doing a lot of good in terms of exposing a lot of the corruption that was happening with, the USA, and they're still digging through those files and restoring some of the laws back to common sense for things that got way too far out there. But the worry for me is if he's teaming up with Elon and they're pushing this AI down our throat and they're trying to make a competitive environment to say, oh, it's an AI race with China, and that becomes a race to roll out this AI surveillance that we've been sort of warning about all along. So that to me is the most important thing to watch. They can do these other things, but if it still means they're going to completely roll out 15-minute cities, digital ID, AI surveillance of everything, doesn't matter what else you do because we're completely enslaved at that point, really.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And, as you think about this stuff, remember that, as I say, they come at it from the perspective of what's best for the US. US, of course, is, and the tech bros are very much, now in government. Elon is being let run loose through for the Doge into various departments. And, he said the other day he's put one through the wood chipper and more to follow. How much of this is real savings? How much of it's spurious? Who knows? But yeah, there are some fundamental shifts here in terms of values. And I guess if you believe in raw meat capitalism and, the power of money should win out, then you're probably cheering. I'm afraid that I don't believe that capitalism necessarily works for ordinary people. And if you take the next slide as an example, the tariffs which are there now on steel and aluminium, that's going to put the goods up cost-wise in the US. Now, you know, there are some winners and losers. But the bottom line with all of this is that effectively we're going to be in the situation where ordinary people are going to find inflation is higher. And we'll touch on shortly the implications of this, in fact, what Powell is now indicating.
Question with the tariffs, Martin. We saw the UK backtrack a little bit. What do you think is going to happen with that debate on if he's going to give Australia the exemption on tariffs?
It's a really interesting one. You know, he was sort of hinting perhaps he would, maybe because of AUKUS, maybe because, you know, we're buying lots of subs from the US. You know, that maybe AUKUS is Australia's saving grace. But I'm not sure. The problem with tariffs is, you know, it's partly just raw get more money in, but it is also power and influence. And I guess if you dance the right tune in front of Trump and pay your due homage and say all the right things, maybe you'll escape them. And that is, of course, you know, dictatorial, actually. And, you know, yes. King Trump is looking for those loyal subjects around the world who come and bend the knee.
And that's what I've been saying. It's all good to gut government, and clearly government's too big, and we'll get to how big it is in Australia and that type of thing. But if you gut it all and then run it by your AI, then, you know what I mean, that's not much of an improvement. So that's one I'm watching really carefully.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I always come back to who is government for, right? Government is not just for the big guys and the big corporates, right? Government should be there to provide the services and the degree of protection for ordinary citizens, whether you're in the US or whether you're in Australia. And whether, in fact, this ends up being good for ordinary people, I think, is a really open question. And to my mind, the guardrails aren't there now to protect those very important interests. And therefore, this could be, you know, a very worrying turn. And of course, the fact is that other politicians in other countries are also looking to see what Trump is doing and are now talking about emulating what he's doing. So this could be quite a revolutionary shift in terms of the way that power moves. Germany's got an election coming up. You know, it's interesting the right wing then is in the ascendancy for the first time for quite some time. And, of course, our upcoming election will be quite interesting, although in Australia, of course, frankly, both sides of politics are singing the same song anyway, so it doesn't make a lot of difference.
Yeah, and interesting with that German election, with the rise of the right-wing parties, are they going to pull the same stunt in, was it Romania, where they said it's Russian interference and they've scrapped it? So it's going to be, this year I think is going to be the craziest year of our lives.
Absolutely. And just on the imports, it's just we're looking at the next slide. So it's interesting to see how, for example, cars and petroleum and phones and computers and motor vehicles are spread between Canada, Mexico, China and the rest of the world. And it's interesting how just bigger deal, you know, Mexico and Canada is, particularly, of course, Canada and petroleum and Mexico and cars and things. So it is quite interesting just seeing the trade mix. And, of course, one of the other objectives with Trump here is to generate income from tariffs that can offset some of the deficits that are actually sitting there in the US at the moment. And, of course, he's got this idea of reducing income tax in the US ultimately. So, you know, this is... shifts, tectonic shifts that we're now starting to feel the effects of.
Okay, moving on. So Trump's really pushed back against central bank digital currencies, which you and I are both against. But yes. Does that pave the way for China and Europe, as they say?
Well, this is really interesting. And it was, you know, one of the early orders was no central bank digital currency in the US. And of course, that's because the Bitcoin community in particular and crypto more generally has been very much, you know, ponying up to Trump. And he's certainly saying, no, the future is going to be Bitcoin. We want a Bitcoin-based economy in the US, you know, maybe even use Bitcoin as reserves. So I thought that was a really interesting development. But it does leave the door open for China and even the Eurozone. So, yeah, this is something to watch. The Eurozone's got this idea, and it's being supported by the UN, of a global central bank digital currency, you know, and if you think about what that could mean, I don't believe that that's the right answer either. But it is fascinating to see this. But, you know, this is good news for the crypto community, I think. And Bitcoin, if you see on the, you know, on the next slide, touched 100,000. It's come back a little bit in US dollar terms. And it's going a bit sideways now because of all the uncertainty. But, you know, who'd have thunk it that you've now got a US president who is, you know, King Bitcoin.
And just one other thing on the stable coins, Martin, which I know you're familiar with a little bit, the USDC, which rose to power in the past couple of years because there was a lot of question marks around Tether and what banks are with overseas and stuff, that is already tightly integrated with Coinbase. It's, you know, the biggest US exchange and fully regulated. So that is effectively already a central bank digital currency if they really wanted it to be. So yeah, we'll wait and see if they really start to push that as the alternative and say, oh no, this isn't a central bank digital currency as well.
Yeah, and just on these other meme coins, of course, Trump and his wife both launched their own coins, rushed up, and presumably made a lot of money, and then it's dropped back dramatically. So once again, it shows you the instability of some of these smaller coins in particular. But you know, the Bitcoin story is now, I think, at a new phase, and I think it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. And I think more broadly, the digital community will be, I think, at the center of what Trump is doing over the next few years.
And that was interesting because they launched those coins that both have had a bit of a pump and dump on Solana, which is probably, you know, considered the third most popular coin now. But they've been talking about and buying Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Ethereum-based coins. Mm. So there's a lot here where I'm still waiting to see what's Trump doing with his World Liberty Finance platform. Is he going to try and launch a crypto exchange or something? So, yeah, interesting times there.
Absolutely. Now, let's just go across to Chair Powell because, of course, he was in front of the Senate in the US today and I think tomorrow in front of the other side of the House. He is now changed his tune. So if you go back a few months, they started cutting rates quite fast and hard. We're talking about more cuts. He's now basically saying, well, we're in no hurry to cut rates any further. The inflationary story is probably a little bit stronger than expected. The latest numbers suggest that. Jobs is still quite good in the US, all of those things. So, you know, superficially, the Federal Reserve may well be sitting on the sidelines, but there is a battle going on between you know, the White House and the Federal Reserve in terms of who's calling the shots. Of course, Trump has said on previous occasions he thinks he's got a better handle of what rate should be than Powell does. So that'll be interesting to play out. Powell has said quite clearly he's not going anywhere. You know, he's still got a job to do, et cetera, et cetera. And he's still fixed on the 2% target. So he's going to try and make sure that the 2% inflation target is met. It's above it at the moment. So interesting to play out, but no more rate cuts anytime soon.
Yeah, and maybe even there's been talk of end the Fed as well. So we'll see what happens if that's another thing just to watch that's maybe a bit of a black swan.
Yeah. Now, again, the Fed can't be, just magicked away from Trump's office. It needs to go through, considerable discussions and through Congress. But the fact is that, even this question of what the role of the central bank is part of the story. Now, just on Absolutely. The inflation expectation, if you go to the next slide, really interesting that the data came out last Friday from the University of Michigan. Now, the University of Michigan's a 500-person survey, so it's not like it's massive, but it was very interesting just to see how much consumers are now sensitive to the expectation of higher inflation. And whilst the New York Fed numbers were still sort of around the 3% last time they reported, this University of Michigan trend, if it's does become a trend, will be quite significant because what it means is that now people are now feeling and worrying about higher inflation. That means that wage growth could actually go up again. It could mean that the Fed's job is harder. So this is one to watch.
All right. Next up here, we've got some US stock markets to go.
Yeah, through. I just thought we'd quickly go through. So markets, well, you know, they've wobbled around a bit since the start of the year. And we had DeepSeek and, you know, the sort of the sharp intake of breath when, is AI overdone or not? Well, that sort of pretty much has gone away again. So you can see the S&P 500 is, just over the 6,000 mark and has really gone sideways. If you look at the NASDAQ, down a little bit from its highs, and that's because people are wondering about the value of the investment in AI versus the amount that firms are putting in, Google, huge investments, for example. But nevertheless, still holding up pretty strong. If you look at the NVIDIA story, of course, that's come back from its highs. When DeepSeek was announced, it dropped dramatically, very significant fall, one of the biggest falls in total value in a day. But it's come back quite a long way. It's about 134 now. And interestingly, if you look at the two-year US bond, which is a sort of a proxy for the cash rate. You can see now we're at 4.2. So we're actually up at quite high levels. And really, those levels are roughly where they were back in December. And if you go back to October, you know, the expectation was 3.5%. Now we're at 4.2%. So the story here is markets doing relatively well. I think they're waiting to see what's happening. And, you know, all of this Trump stuff working through, a lot of people are just saying, well, you know, it's too early to make strong, long decisions. There is quite a lot of money on the sidelines waiting to see what's happening. But I think this two-year bond signal, and the other bond rates as well have gone up too, shows you higher interest rates for longer, there are consequences. And so one of the consequences of all of this is that gold has done really, really well. And we'll put the gold slide up in just a second. But just before we do that, I thought this was quite interesting from the World Gold Council, because the investment demand for gold is expected to continue to rise. Why? Because gold is still seen as a bit of a safe haven, as you know, somewhere away from some of this noise and fury that we're seeing elsewhere. And in fact, if you look at the forecast for 2025, it's fascinating to see that they expect central banks, other investors, and ETF investments in gold to be relatively strong, in fact, probably higher than this year, which of course then signals the prospect of hard gold prices. And if you look at the gold price, it's around 2933, give or take. You can see that that run-up has been dramatic. I think this is one of the most significant events that we're seeing at the moment, that effectively, because of the global uncertainty, because of the local uncertainty, gold is seen very much as something to hold on to. I think that a lot of central banks, particularly in Asia, are actually buying gold quite firmly at the moment, China included, of course. And that's, again, moving perhaps away from the dominance of the dollar. All those things are in play as well. So the expectation, I think, probably is that this gold trajectory will continue for some time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I was wanting to add here, Martin, is if you look at 2020, when we had a big buying demand for gold here, and a lot of it came from the ETFs around COVID as people ran to safety, these forecasts aren't really predicting much in the way of the ETFs. And that reflects what we've seen in Chinese gold trading activities absolutely exploding. And then COMEX, and it's had this huge boom as well. And we're hearing that those stories, aren't we, about the appetite for physical gold.
Yes.
Which is different to going, oh, I'm just going to buy something in my ETF. It shows people are being a lot more seeking true safety with their money. And I think that's why, as long as Bitcoin keeps standing the test of time and gold and silver and all these alternatives, they're still favorable in these conditions.
I think that point you just made about physical gold versus the quasi gold is really, really important, right? Because many people were actually holding gold through ETFs or through other mechanisms. That is now being questioned quite strongly. And as you say, holding physical gold. And in fact, there's been a big shift in the movement of gold around the place relatively recently. And whether you saw this, but people have been taking gold out of London and putting it across to the US for fear of tariffs later. So there's a lot of gold, physical gold going around the place, which is big and heavy. So it's quite fascinating. But you also make the point, I think quite rightly, that you know, you can put gold and you can put crypto and silver and a few other things in a separate basket, because they do provide potentially some protection from this massive global uncertainty. Let's just switch to Australia, because you know, the big call, according to the money markets, is that next Tuesday the RBA will cut the cash rate to 4.1 from 4.35%. So Dr. Oliver AMP thinks it's an 80% chance. The market's saying 93% chance. I'm not sure that it's as easy as that. I made a show the other day on the next slide, RBA cut, not a done deal yet. But, and I like Warren Hogan as a sort of a bit of a counterpoint here, because he's basically saying, well, hang on a moment. You know, there are questions to ask here. We've got very strong employment, much stronger than expected. We've got inflation reported at about 2.4, but of course the 2.4 is masked thanks to a lot of government support for electricity and you know, travel in from a state perspective and rental assistance and, you know, medical. Oh, there's a bunch of stuff pushing the CPI down. And it's got to the point now where the CPI, not just the headline, but the underlying, is being influenced down because of all the government initiatives. And of course, the government will say, well, we're helping with all the support. The truth, of course, is that the RBA will probably look through some of that. So there is a quizzical question. My suspicion is they will probably cut next Tuesday, but that won't necessarily be the first of many, and probably maybe we get one or two more through this year. And I'd make the point that because of the bigger mortgages that people have, this won't necessarily be huge. But it is quite interesting just watching the story here in terms of the RBA cut. It's worth, I think, highlighting that If you look at the Aussie dollar is down. It's now back up a little bit, around 62 and a bit. But that's another factor to bear in mind, because, of course, if the dollar goes down, our imports effectively cost us more. So because we buy in US dollars, like the oil could be higher. That could be inflationary. That's something else the RBA would also need to think about. And on the next slide, it's worth just highlighting the fact that the rate cut is just half the story, because, of course, the rate cut doesn't translate directly to mortgage rates. There's a bit of a sort of a gap between that and, you know, an article here showing that over the last 10 years when rates were cut, the banks didn't necessarily pass all of it on to existing customers. Quite often what you saw was actually the best rates for new customers. So you have to sort of churn your mortgage to be able to get them. So that'll be interesting to watch. And then just back to this trimmed mean inflation versus the way of looking at it. You know, the ABS trimmed mean, according to one piece of analysis here, is higher than the Melbourne Institute trimmed mean gauge. So there's even a bit of a debate and a bit of a dialogue about, well, what is the level of inflation? How are we measuring it? Is it right? And I do think that's the really big question, because I don't see real inflation as low as the official figures suggest it is. And certainly in my surveys, I see a lot of people under pressure. You look at what other costs are down the shops. A lot of people are saying, well, that's ridiculous. It's nothing like real inflation. So to my mind, that's a problem. And it's interesting that some of the ABS data that came out that looked at spending by different types of people showed that those with a mortgage, their costs were still a lot higher than the trimmed mean over the last 12 months. So real impact on real households is very significant, as is, of course, the continued drift up in tax take, because the tax bans are frozen, despite the fact that we got a bit of tax back earlier on. So there's a big bunch of questions here.
Okay. So next up, job vacancies.
Yeah. Well, the other thing here, the jobs market's quite strong, and you can see there that the long-term trend is up and the job vacancies was higher. So this does not signal an economy that's in dire straits at the moment, although growth is a lot lower than it was. So there's a really interesting question there as to whether this jobs will also be another reason why the RBA might actually just sit on their hands. Remember, of course, that the board will structurally change after the February meeting. Two new members will come in. Will that also be something to bear in mind in the next meeting? So very interesting to see how this plays out.
Just on the jobs though, Martin, the majority, if not all, jobs are government created jobs. And you've seen that figure floating around that one in five Australians is now employed by the government, which is absolutely insane when people think of, you know, their parliament or whatever, this small group of people that get to make some decisions on behalf of us once they're elected. It is not like that at all. It's become this monster. And then you consider the percent of people that are retirement age, the percent of people that are too young to work. And we now have this tiny fraction of this, you know, the private sector that's paying all these taxes for these governments to work. You know, we're paying their wages kind of thing. It's out of control. It's mathematically, unless something changes, it's absolutely disastrous, the position we're now in.
Well, that's why productivity is so low, of course, and that's the real problem. And the other point is that Chalmers was saying, this idea of market versus non-market jobs is actually not the right way to look at it. And, you know, he's, for example, said, well, there's a lot of people in the NDIS sector who are actually in the private sector, but still being paid by government money. So, you know, that was a bit of a spurious argument too. This is an unsustainable situation where the share of the overall economy supported by government has gone through the roof. That means that the deficits will get bigger. That means that productivity will continue to go backwards, and that means effectively that the sustainability of the Australian economy is in question, particularly with all those international threads that we spoke about earlier on. And yet the government just blithely says, well, we've done everything we can, you know, we're better than the other guys, because there's an election coming soon. And if the RBA does cut rates, I wouldn't be surprised to see an election being announced almost immediately.
Okay, so capital city home price changes.
Yeah, just to show you that there's a long, strong variation, but, you know, the overall growth is down a little bit. Brisbane is looking a little bit more wobbly now. Growth rates in Perth is still quite strong. Melbourne's still relatively weak. And, you know, the story here is beginning to come home, but unfortunately these high-level indices don't tell you very much at all. When you actually start looking at the granularity, what you're finding is that unit prices in some areas are quite strong, but in others are quite weak. Demand for standalone houses is really, really strong, particularly in some of the capital cities, and prices are still quite strong there. But That's in the middle ground at the top end of the market. That's where the major falls are now happening, and people are actually seeing quite considerable drops in value. And some regional areas are also reporting drops in value now. So there's a lot of fluidity, and listings are rising at the moment. There are more properties coming on, and it's quite strong demand. First-time buyers, of course, using Bank of Mum and Dad, still active. And some investors are selling because they can't get a return. Other investors are buying, though, because they still think that property investment is the best thing to do. So it's a really complex situation. Too soon to really call how the property market's going to go this year.
All I would add, Martin, is that I talk regularly to my mates that are tradies and that work in the property finance sector and whatnot, and they're definitely, for the first time in a few years, people saying, yeah, it's cooled down in terms of there's still plenty of demand for building, but some of them were, 2 years out, and now it's coming back and getting a little bit harder to find new work. But some of the reports of houses, yes, houses that were a million now at 700,000, just things like that that we haven't really heard before. And, they're probably the more exceptional cases, but we're definitely hearing things that I haven't heard since we started doing the show really many years ago now.
Well, we'll touch on a few of those things in a couple of slides, but just in terms of just bear in mind, if you look at capacity to pay versus house prices, it's still very adverse, and you really are up against it, and that's a really important point. So that's a sort of just an objective gap between what you can pay and what you need to pay to be able to get into the market. Consumer confidence, by the way, is a little bit wobbly, a little bit higher at the moment, but it is quite interesting that if you look at the next one, which is the weekly expectations, it's still around 5%. So consumers still have higher expectations of inflation relative to what the RBA is thinking it's going to be. And I would make a point on the next slide, you can also see that credit growth is still quite strong. So in all of this, what's happened to property, it's worth looking at credit growth. Remember that the credit impulse, in other words, how much people can borrow, is actually quite strong. Now, they've just made an announcement that first-time buyers will be able to borrow more because effectively HECS debt won't be counted in the assessment. And they're doing some other things to try and actually make it more accessible for people to borrow more. The trouble is, of course, the people who borrow more have to pay it back. And so people are borrowing more, they're borrowing later in life, they're getting longer mortgages. So the bottom line here is that the credit impulse means the banks are, they're making a monster at the moment.
Yeah, every year we joke about how they're going to tinker at the sides but not actually get to the root cause of the problem, which is property prices affordability. Yeah. And now they're saying, don't worry about your HECS debt. And what's next? Don't worry about your car loan. Then don't worry about your credit card. There's a reason these things are in place. There's a reason property is unaffordable, but they refuse to fix it.
Well, the interesting thing here is, of course, the HECS debt, it disappears, money disappears out before you ever see it. So effectively, your gross income and your net income will be a bit different because of it. How they actually assess that appropriately is the key question. And my concern is now we are seeing lots of households with 40% of disposable income plus going on housing, whether it's rent or whether it's a mortgage. That's a really bad position. And just to give you a bit of a flavour on that, we're now seeing some of the consequences. So there was a report that came out that said that more Aussie households are falling into financial difficulty with five-year property possessions of high now. Property possessions to five-year high. Not vast numbers, but I think it's a very important trend up. And, of course, the opposition treasurer was talking about the burden on households, and the burden faced by Australian households is astronomical. Labor's economic mismanagement has kept inflation rates higher for longer. Let's face it, this election is all going to be about cost of living and all of those things and housing. So, we're going to be bored stiff with this by the time the election comes. I'd also make the point on the next slide, another angle here is that a lot of retirees who are actually in the rental sector are now really struggling. And this is a problem. Those who actually don't ever manage to get a property as they move into retirement are going to be in severe difficulty because rents are still rising quite fast. It was slightly down because of the CRA.
Yeah,
the rental assistance, but still quite strong. And a lot of people have now got to the point where they've got nowhere to go and they're forced to pay in rent. And that translates into this next slide, which is just the latest stress trends, which shows you that while mortgage stress is down slightly thanks to all the government support, rental stress is still at 76% of households in the rental sector. So it's a real, real problem.
As you say, Martin, it's going to be plastered all over TV, but most of our audience don't watch mainstream TV very much anymore, I hope. So, yes, I agree that the propaganda around these elections is going to be interesting to watch once again, and they're not going to make any changes. It's so ingrained now, I just can't see how they can change it to make it affordable for everyday Aussies and cut all these benefits, the negative gearing and people that own 10 properties, how do you get them back to having one or two investment properties and that kind of thing? I just don't see it happening anytime soon.
No, and it's worth sort of segueing into Alan Kohler's piece, because he actually published a piece and made a show about Australia's housing crisis driven by lip service, hypocrisy and investment culture. Now, he sheets a lot of the blame on Howard's policies of negative gearing, and that's partly true, but it's a much more complicated situation with the deregulation of the financial system, the banks lending a lot more, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a complex picture, but that really upset the Housing Industry Association. And by the way, if you haven't seen Kohler's report, look at that one. Look at the other one too, because he then went and pivoted to the supply side and, of course, said, well, there's an urban middle. We could be building four-storey places in and around the CBDs, and that would solve a lot of issues. No, it wouldn't. It's not a supply side, it's a demand side. It's bad policy over 30-odd years. But, of course, the HIA, who quoted Kohler, said, no, Kohler's incorrect. The capital gains and the negative gearing is not the reason why we've got a problem. Of course, they are people who want to support more building and believe that that's the way to go. The truth is, we have a housing crisis created by 30 to 35 years of bad policy, and now it's coming home to roost, and that's a problem.
Yeah, piggybacked by the mining boom and, you know, cashed up tradies and no recession. It was just all the perfect ingredients for one of the biggest housing bubbles in global
it's
history.
It's a perfect storm, and it's worth highlighting. I made my first ABC interview in 2001, and I was talking then about the risks to housing in Australia from poor policy at that stage, right? And I kept saying it's going to get to the point where it's unaffordable for many people to buy. They'll be buying a smaller place, older. They're going to hold that debt into retirement. There are going to be lots of people in the rental sector who will never buy. I was talking about all of this then, and it's like, no. But now it's there. And so, you know, we're at that point now where, because of this bad policy, because neither side of government wants to really tackle the core issues, the financial sector, of course, is just wanting to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And just come back to CBA, just announced their massive, massive profits once again. So, you know, the banks are doing great, but not everybody else. Now, just two little last tidbits, because I couldn't resist this. Did you see this? Media Watch.
I don't watch it now.
Okay, so Media Watch was talking about a show called Find My Beach House. This is the Channel 9 series, right? Where basically you take somebody around and get them to look at three properties and then which is the best, and they go and buy it, right? Except they've now proved that quite a few of the people already had bought a property and own a property. So they actually walked around their own property as though it was for the first time they'd ever seen. Oh, isn't that lovely? You know, oh yeah, I'm not sure we can afford it. They'd already bought it. And interestingly, one of them who built their own property walked around their own property, and it's now on the market thanks to the publicity, right? And another one, same thing, their own property was one of the three that they actually were shown. They're now offering Airbnb and advertising the fact that it was on Beach House. Interestingly, Channel 9, of course, is very big in the property sector. So you can't believe anything you see on the TV with regard to property. They've taken down the shows now, but I thought that was a really fascinating case study of you can't believe what you see.
No, and I think most people know reality TV is junk, but that is just like blatant lying. And I feel like Australia and even America, I feel like honestly half the stuff we see, it's like we're watching a movie. It's just so ridiculous. What has happened to common sense and that type of thing?
It is absolutely ridiculous. And, the producer of the series tried to sort of, well, it just adds to the, interest. It makes it a more interesting show. Yeah, but truth. What about truth? Surely that should be there. And people, of course, are being misled by articles in the media. A lot of the media is directly connected to the real estate sector. The real estate sector keeps saying, oh, well, when rates cut, you know, the property price is going to take off, you know, buy. So the problem is you can't trust what you see, what you read, particularly around real estate. Do your own research is what I keep saying. And the final slide, just a little bit of a minor victory here. Chalmers earlier in the week announced that, in fact, they've done a deal. This is for provision of cash and for branches in the bush. And now all four banks, including ANZ, have signed up for a longer agreement. They've also put a moratorium on bank closures. This is a bit of a victory for, you know, I've been pushing on this for quite some time. It looks as though other organisations may well come in too. But two things. This is a bit of a fudge insofar that there was talk of levying all the banks to provide support for the regions, and they've done a U-turn on that because, of course, that could be bad from an election point of view. And the Bank of Post, Australia Post, is very much part of it now. And in fact, more services will be provided by Australia Post. But even the owner of the sort of leader of Australia Post did say that that wouldn't necessarily be enough to make it really profitable long term. So this is a fudge. And it's a small victory, but I still think that really the agenda is still to remove cash out of the system and to go digital and right, take you right back to where we started this conversation. The future of a digital controlled system is very much coming to the fore. And whilst this is a small victory with regard to access to cash, it's insufficient. There's a deadline at the end of this week to put a Treasury response back about cash and the use of cash. And of course, they've ring-fenced small businesses and they don't worry about small businesses, blah, 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 blah. Point is, small businesses won't be able to take cash if they can't get cash out of the system and put cash back into the system because branches don't exist. So it's part of a bigger digital story here. And unfortunately, I see this as a small win, but not necessarily a strategic win.
Yeah, as you say, after Commonwealth Bank announced record profits and all that type of thing, and I'll just... I hope people understand that this is all by design. If nothing changes, inflation, food is going to keep getting more expensive, and start to get a plan B. You know, is it worth moving somewhere that's cheaper and getting further out of the cities as we're starting to see crime rise? And I made that documentary 4 or 5 years ago about Australia, the coming financial crisis, and we spoke about everything about reliance on China and not constructing and building and manufacturing anything locally, the immigration problem and how they're going to throw all these excuses but not fix the housing market. And now it's all here. And I don't like to be, you know, a doomsayer, but I generally feel this is going to be a really tough time for Australia until we sort this out. Because I do think we are one of the best countries and plenty of resources, and we've got everything to make it the best country on the planet, but it's been so poorly run. All the numbers, all the data showing that our freedoms and everything's just falling faster than other countries.
Now, I want to underscore what you just said, Alex. It's by design, right? This is not just happenstance. This is not just COVID. This is not just the international situation, right? Decisions have been taken by successive generations of politicians against the interests of ordinary Australians. And that's the problem. And until that changes, nothing will change. And until that changes, we're going to be paying more than we should for food and basic services. We're going to find productivity continues to grind lower. We're going to find that more households are in difficulty. And, you know, frankly, our political system is very, very broken. Worth thinking about that in the context of the upcoming election.
Awesome. Well, great stuff. Hope you guys have enjoyed that one at home. As always, we'll try and read your questions and comments down below. All the links to follow Martin and all his great work down below. And if you're interested in the crypto side of things, all the links to follow my work down below. And we'll see you again next month, Martin. Cheers.
Cheers. Take care.